Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcast.
Sure is. This week, we will be taking on some more vintage fiction in the form of Varney the Vampire or The Feast of Blood.
Can you tell us a little bit about the background of this, Ken? Like, where does this fall in the vampire mythos?
Very early, post John Polidori's The Vampire, which was a poem originally attributed to Byron and in large part based on Byron, written during the same marathon horror writing session that produced Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. But Varney was a penny dreadful published weekly from 1845 to 1847 in England, and then collected at its end into a novel form in 1847. A classic Victorian horror adventure, published chapter by chapter to maximize profits, with the author paid by the typeset line, which is where we get the term penny a liner to describe these stories. Written by either James Malcolm Rymer or Thomas Peckett Prest, no one's really sure. And because they were paid by the word, the total final word count is 667,000 words.
Good lord.
And because it's such an early work of vampire fiction, it introduced many vampire tropes that we know and love today, including fangs that leave two puncture wounds in the victim's throat, hypnotic powers, super strength, coming in through the window to attack a sleeping victim. I guess that had never occurred to anyone before, somehow. And the trope of the sympathetic vampire, that is, the vampire who does do a murder but feels really bad about it.
It's the Edward Cullen.
The Edward Cullen can trace his lineage directly back to Varney the Vampire.
So this is pre-Dracula?
This is pre-Dracula and pre-Carmilla.
Pre-Carmilla, ooh.
Varney the Vampire, some call him. And by some, I mean me, just now.
I was gonna say, do some people other than Ken call him that?
Probably. At conventions I can't go to because they're too scary.
Honestly, they're not even scary for the reasons you think. They're just scary because, like, man, horror fans are a real toss-up. And I say that as one.
So today we will be presenting the first chapter of Varney the Vampire, which clocks in at under 10,000 words.
Ooh, I'm so excited. I've never read it.
Midnight, the hailstorm, the dreadful visitor, the vampire.
Ooh.
The solemn tones of an old cathedral clock have announced midnight. The air is thick and heavy. A strange, death-like stillness pervades all nature, like the ominous calm which precedes some more than usually terrific outbreak of the elements. They seem to have paused, even in their ordinary fluctuations, to gather a terrific strength for the great effort. A faint peal of thunder now comes from far off, like a signal gun for the battle of the winds to begin. It appeared to awaken them from their lethargy, and one awful, warring hurricane swept over a whole city, producing more devastation in the 4 or 5 minutes it lasted than would a half century of ordinary phenomena.
Wow, hey, wow, really getting those Penny Aligned vibes right now. What if my first 3 chapters were an extended mixed metaphor?
Here we see where a dark and stormy night would have honestly been an improvement.
Yeah, on God for real, like, maybe he should have considered.
It was as if some giant had blown upon some toy town and scattered many of the buildings before the hot blast of his terrific breath.
No, thank you.
For as suddenly as that blast of wind had come did it cease, and all was as still and calm as before.
All right, I'm not going to make the obvious jokes there.
Terrific! It's worth noting that the word terrific used to mean terror-inducing, as some Terry Pratchett fans no doubt already know.
Yeah, but we're allowed to think it's funny in the here and the now, even if we acknowledge that.
Especially as thus far it has been used once per paragraph in this story. Oh, sorry, twice in the first paragraph and once in the second paragraph.
A truly terrific use of the vocabulary.
I'm gonna start the Varney drinking game now. Drink every time the word terrific shows up.
Oh, here we go. Take a massive swig of that water.
Sleepers awakened and thought that what they had heard must be the confused chimera of a dream.
Wow.
Then they trembled and turned to sleep again.
I'm not gonna lie to you, I really like that sentence though.
I just like it because I like the word chimera.
That might be entirely why I like it as well.
All is still, still as the very grave. Not a sound breaks through the magic of repose. What is that? A strange pattering noise, as of a million of fairy feet.
A Okay, all right. Sure.
Pause real quick to restrain my own laughter. It is hail, yes, a hailstorm has burst over the city. Leaves are dashed from the trees, mingled with small boughs. Windows that lie most opposed to the direct fury of the pelting particles of ice are broken, and the rapt repose that was before so remarkable in its intensity is exchanged for a noise which, in its accumulation, drowns every cry of surprise or consternation which here and there arose from the persons who found their houses invaded by the storm. Now and then, too, there would come a sudden gust of wind that in its strength would, for a moment, hold millions of little hailstones suspended in mid-air, but it was only to dash them with redoubled force in some new direction, where more mischief was to be done.
I don't think the weather works like that.
I have definitely seen sideways rain before.
Sideways rain, sure. Oh, did I misunderstand laterally?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's on me then. Sorry.
Oh, how the storm raged! Hail, rain, wind. It was, in very truth, an awful night.
That's what rain be do.
There is an antique chamber in an ancient house. Curious and quaint carvings adorn the walls, and the large chimney piece is a curiosity of itself. The ceiling is low, and a large bay window from roof to floor looks to the west. The window is latticed, and filled with curiously painted glass and rich stained pieces, which send in a strange yet beautiful light when sun or moon shines into the apartment. There is but one portrait in that room, although the walls seem paralleled for the express purpose of containing a series of pictures. That portrait is of a young man with a pale face, a stately brow, and a strange expression about the eyes, which no one cared to look on twice.
Just the once.
Just the once. Once will do. There is a stately bed in that chamber, of carved walnut wood it is made, rich in design and elaborate in execution, one of those works of art which owe their existence to the Elizabethan era. It is hung with heavy silken and damask furnishing. Nodding feathers are at its corners. Covered with dust are they, and they lend a funereal aspect to the room. The floors of polished oak. Okay, so I suggested we do this on the podcast because I thought it was a funny vampire book. I didn't realize we were going to get more antiques content than any of the antiques cozy mysteries we read.
So I was going to say, so far, I was really impressed. Like, this is really nice. Elizabethan damask furnishings. Like, it's a really good portrait. Polished oak. God, that floor sounds gorgeous, though, huh?
Yeah, I'm jealous. God, how the hail dashes on the old bay window.
Oh, God.
Like an occasional discharge of mimic musketry, it comes clashing, beating, and cracking upon the small panes, but they resist it. Their small size saves them. The wind, the hail, the rain expend their fury in vain.
So, like, 2 points. What is mimic musketry? And if you're making it plain that you're doing a metaphor, why did you point out that it was fake?
That's a great question.
And also, just like real quick, how many times are you going to tell me the parts of storm that are noisy? Because it's a lot so far.
As many times as they'll pay me for it.
Yep, here we go. There's the penny line.
I would also like to point out, in emphasizing the small window panes, that this was published pre-Crystal Palace, so either pre or very shortly after the invention of the large plate glass that we know today.
Oh, handy to know.
So small leaded windows would have been the norm for people who had glass. Which, by this point, most people had glass. Glass prices had come down a bit from the pre-American Revolution era, but still not quite able to make big picture windows for birds to fly into.
Huh. Neat.
I just love that the Victorians' response to inventing plate glass was, let's build a castle out of it.
Well, like, in fairness, that's dope. Like, if I invented, like, a supremely beautiful, like, incredible thing that just, like, shimmered in the light, I think my next thing would be, like, I'm gonna fucking house out of this. Holy shit.
The bed in that old chamber is occupied. A creature formed in all fashions of loveliness lies in a half-sleep upon that ancient couch.
So if you're gonna leave that to my imagination, I'm actually just picturing several dogs.
A girl young and beautiful as a spring morning.
Oh, that's disappointing, actually.
Her long hair has escaped from its confinement and streams over the blackened coverings of the bedstead. She has been restless in her sleep, for the clothing of the bed is in much confusion. Side note, letting down your hair in this era makes you a hussy. So, in order to preserve this presumable heroine's virtue, the author has to let her be asleep before she can let her hair down. One arm is over her head, the other hangs nearly off the side of the bed near to which she lies. A neck and bosom that would have formed a study for the rarest sculptor that ever Providence gave genius to, were half disclosed. She moaned slightly in her sleep, and once or twice the lips moved as if in prayer. At least one might judge so, for the name of him who suffered for all came once fatally for them.
Uh-oh, this is getting real slutty.
That's the other thing, is that the author is now making us complicit in his voyeurism of this sleeping girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish he wouldn't.
I don't like it. I'm gonna say, problematic. Call out post for either of those dudes, whichever one actually wrote it.
I feel like a call out post for the Victorians in general is warranted. Or it could be that we are so lecherous and voyeuristic because we are in the point of view of the monster.
We're not supposed to like what we're seeing.
No.
Ha ha!
That's the excuse we'll use. She has endured much fatigue, and the storm does not awaken her, but it can disturb the slumbers it does not possess the power to destroy entirely. The turmoil of the elements wakes the senses, although it cannot entirely break the repose they have lapsed into. Oh, what a world of witchery was in that mouth, slightly parted and exhibiting within the pearly teeth that glistened even in the faint light that came from that bay window.
Oh my god, dude, calm the fuck down. Have a sandwich.
Yeah, I feel like the villainous viewpoint no longer excuses this because it's about to get worse, everybody. How sweetly the long silken eyelashes lay upon the cheek.
That's fucking weird.
Now she moves, and one shoulder is entirely visible.
Whoa.
Whiter, fairer than the spotless clothing of the bed on which she lies, is the smooth skin of that fair creature, just budding into womanhood.
Shut up.
And in that transition state which presents to us all the charms of the girl, almost of the child, with the more matured beauty and gentleness of advancing years.
Alright, I'm going to have this person arrested.
We need to lock up the Victorians.
First thing I do when I get a time machine is arrest this man.
Was that lightning? Yes, an awful, vivid, terrifying flash. Then a roaring peal of thunder, as if 1,000 mountains were rolling over one another in the blue vault of heaven. Who sleeps now in that ancient city? Not one living soul. The dread trumpet of eternity could not more effectually have awakened anyone. In case you forgot, the storm is still happening.
I hear it was wind, hail, and rain.
The hail continues. The wind continues. The uproar of the elements seems at its height. Now she awakens, the beautiful girl in the antique bed. She opens those eyes of celestial blue, and a faint cry of alarm bursts from her lips. At least it is a cry which, amid the noise and turmoil without, sounds but faint and weak. She sits upon the bed and presses her hands upon her eyes. Heavens, what a wild torrent of wind and rain and hail!
Come on,
every
ready.
Goddamn time!
Come on, man!
The thunder likewise seems intent upon awakening sufficient echoes to last until the next flash of forked lightning should again produce the wild concussion of the air. Did you know that lightning makes thunder? In case you've forgotten, here it is again. She murmurs a prayer for those she loves best. The names of those dear to her gentle heart come from her lips. She weeps and prays. She thinks then of what devastation the storm must surely produce, and to the great God of heaven she prays for all living things. Another flash, a wild, blue, bewildering flash of lightning streams across that bay window, for an instant bringing out every color in it with terrible distinctness. A shriek bursts from the lips of the young girl, and then, with eyes fixed upon that window, which in another moment is all darkness, and with such an expression of terror upon her face as it had never before known, she trembled, and the perspiration of intense fear stood upon her brow.
I really want to sit down every writer who's just, like, unnecessarily written too much, and I want to sit them down and be like, don't you feel fucking stupid? You didn't even get paid extra to write like this. Like, at least I know why he's doing this. Why did you?
What's your excuse? Well, now we're getting the same problem both with Wattpad profiting off the serial release of stories chapter by chapter, and also with National Novel Writing Month, which rewards authors for quantity over short periods of time rather than quality.
Which, like, just to be clear, isn't inherently bad, but people don't seem to understand that it's quantity for practice, not immediate sale.
Yes, it is quantity to get the words out so you have a first draft to work with that you can edit into something brilliant. Not 50,000 words you write in a month and then immediately release.
Yeah, yeah. See, people have perverted the original vision of NaNoWriMo.
What? What was it? She gasped. Real or a delusion? Oh God, what was it? A figure tall and gaunt, endeavoring from the outside to unclasp the window. I saw it. That flash of lightning revealed it to me. It stood the whole length of the window.
I have eyes.
Just normal things I say out loud to myself in my own room.
What was it? Why, I think it might have been hail, wind, and rain.
I like how she's explaining to herself how she saw it. Like, the lighting conditions that allowed her to see this.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a lull of the wind. The hail was not falling so thickly. Moreover, it now fell, what there was of it, straight. And yet a strange clattering sound came upon the glass of that long window. It could not be a delusion. She is awake, and she hears it. What can produce it? Another flash of lightning, another shriek. There could be now no delusion.
Except that this is good book.
A tall figure is standing on the ledge immediately outside the long window. Its fingernails upon the glass that produced the sound so like the hail, now that the hail has ceased. Intense fear paralyzed the limbs of that beautiful girl. That one shriek is all she can utter, with hands clasped, a face of marble, a heart beating so wildly in her bosom that each moment it seems as if it would break its confines, eyes distended and fixed upon the window. She waits, frozen with horror.
Yeah, I just really need to pick up the word eyes distended. That's the worst. I don't know care what you were trying to convey. I guarantee you failed and made me uncomfortable.
I think they're trying to say her eyes are wide to the point that they're almost bugging out of her head. But it sounds like she's got those trick glasses that have, like, slinkies attached to the eyeballs.
The pattering and clattering of the nails continue. No word is spoken, and now she fancies she can trace the darker form of that figure against the window, and she can see the long arms moving to and fro, feeling for some mode of entrance. What strange light is it that now gradually creeps up into the air? Red and terrible, brighter and brighter it grows. The lightning has set fire to a mill, and the reflection of the rapidly consuming building falls upon that long window. There can be no mistake. The figure is there, still feeling for an entrance, and clattering against the glass with its long nails, that appear as if the growth of many years had been untouched.
I really love this imagery. They're trying to make it really scary, but I'm just picturing, like...
acrylics?
Yeah. It's Danny DeVito slamming on the window with his, like, his full acrylic set going, like, "Hey! Hey, get in!" It's not painting the picture it thinks it's painting.
She tries to scream again, but a choking sensation comes over her, and she cannot. It is too dreadful. She tries to move. Each limb seems weighed down by tons of lead. She can but in a hoarse, faint whisper cry, "Help! Help! Help! Help!"
Okay. All right.
And that one word she repeats like a person in a dream. The red glare of the fire continues. It throws up the tall, gaunt figure in hideous relief against the long window. It shows, too, upon the one portrait that is in the chamber, and that portrait appears to fix its eyes upon the attempting intruder, while the flickering light from the fire makes it look fearfully lifelike. A small pane of glass is broken, and the form from without introduces a long, gaunt hand, which seems utterly destitute of flesh. The fastening is removed, and one half of the window, which opens like folding doors, is swung wide upon its hinges. And yet now she could not scream, she could not move. "Help! Help! Help!" was all she could say.
Was that dog barking in there?
But oh, that look of terror that sat upon her face, it was dreadful. A look to haunt the memory for a lifetime. A look to obtrude itself upon the happiest moments and turn them to bitterness.
God. Yeah, I know that feeling.
The figure turns half round and the light falls upon the face. It is perfectly white, perfectly bloodless. The eyes look like polished tin. The lips are drawn back, and the principal feature next to those dreadful eyes is the teeth, the fearful-looking teeth, projecting like those of some wild animal, hideously, glaringly white, and fang-like.
Fang-like? So different from fangs.
Probably because they're not hollow to pass on toxin.
Ah, we're going with the scientific method.
It approaches the bed with a strange gliding movement. It clashes together the long nails that literally appear to hang from the finger ends.
You see my acrylics?
No sound comes from its lips. Is she going mad? That young and beautiful girl exposed to so much terror? She has drawn up all her limbs. She cannot even now say help. Oh, sorry. Help. The power of articulation is gone. But the power of movement has returned to her. She can draw herself slowly along to the other side of the bed from that towards which the hideous appearance is coming. From that towards which the hideous appearance is coming.
That's a lot of words.
A hell of a roundabout way to describe crawling away from it.
Yeah, it really, like, it approaches full word salad. I gotta know who did Varney's tips, though. That sounds really dope.
But her eyes are fascinated. The glance of a serpent could not have produced a greater effect upon her than the fixed gaze of those awful metallic-looking eyes that were bent upon her face.
Again with the bad description of eyes.
Crouching down so that the gigantic height was lost and the horrible protruding white face was the most prominent object came on the figure.
Came on?
What was it? What did it want there? What made it look so hideous, so unlike an inhabitant of the earth, and yet to be on it?
I don't know that that worked out grammatically.
Now she has got to the verge of the bed and the figure pauses. It seems as if when it paused she lost the power to proceed. The clothing of the bed was now clutched in her hands with unconscious power. She drew her breath short and thick. Her bosom heaves and her limbs tremble, yet she cannot withdraw her eyes from that marble-looking face. He holds her with his glittering eye. The storm has ceased. All is still. The winds are hushed. The church clock proclaims the hour of one. A hissing sound comes from the throat of the hideous being, and he raises his long, gaunt arms. The lips move. He advances. The girl places one small foot from the bed onto the floor. She is unconsciously dragging the clothing with her. The door of the room is in that direction. Can she reach it? Has she the power to walk? Can she withdraw her eyes from the face of the intruder, and so break the hideous charm?
Find out this and more.
God of heaven, is it real? Or some dream so like reality as to nearly overturn the judgment forever? The figure has paused again, and half on the bed and half out of it the young girl lies trembling. Her long hair streams across the entire width of the bed. As she has slowly moved along, she has left it streaming across the pillows. The pause lasted about a minute. Oh, what an age of agony. That minute was, indeed, enough for madness to do its full work in.
We get it, buddy. You're getting paid by the word.
With a sudden rush that could not be foreseen, with a strange howling cry that was enough to awaken terror in every breast, the figure seized the long tresses of her hair, and twining them round his bony hands, he held her to the bed. Then she screamed. Heaven granted her then power to scream. Shriek followed shriek in rapid succession. The bedclothes fell in a heap by the side of the bed. She was dragged by her long silken hair completely onto it again. Her beautifully rounded limbs quivered with the agony of her soul. Hey, not really an appropriate time to point out that you think she's hot, dude.
Yeah, buddy, hey, something, like, there's a lot going on right now. Can we focus?
The glassy, horrible eyes of the figure ran over that angelic form with a hideous satisfaction. Horrible profanation. He drags her head to the bed's edge. He forces it back by the long hair still entwined in his grasp. With a plunge, he seizes her neck in his fang-like teeth. A gush of blood and a hideous sucking noise follows. The girl has swooned, and the vampire is at his hideous repast.
Bwomp, bwomp, bwah.
End of chapter one.
I was actually just going to point out that reading along, I dead-ass thought it said Shrek followed Shrek. That's it. That's all I had to say.
My thought going through this was all of this could be communicated in maximum 30 seconds of film.
Yeah, yeah. That is sobering to think about it.
Or by a better author, 3 paragraphs. But, you know, who's counting? So, Dee, what did you think of your first taste of Varney the Vampire? Your first taste of his hideous repast, as it were.
I was gonna say, I'm at my hideous repast. You know, I like vampires, so I guess I'm kinda in. Don't like how horny it is. Not really here for that. But now that the vampire is here, I see what you mean about being kind of the introduction of, like, the hypnotically beautiful vampire.
Or even just the hypnotic vampire, because he's definitely not pretty.
Oh, he's not pretty, but, like, they're also not explicitly called, like, they're not really describing him fully like Nosferatu or anything just yet.
They described him as, like, a corpse with fleshless fingers and claws.
Yeah, but, like, the face is, like marble. You know, it's just, like, it's not, it's, he's prettier than I thought he was.
Okay, so you think this falls more on the Edward Cullen side of the fence than the Nosferatu side of the fence?
Yeah, I think they're definitely dumbing down the undead aspect here. Probably so they don't have to interrupt how horny they are. I don't know, maybe that's a hot take, but it's pretty good, though. I like knowing exactly what makes a storm a storm. Turns out it's wind, hail, and rain.
Several times over.
Yeah, yeah, they're really, like, I'm gonna pass a test about that. I've had it repeated a lot. I liked it. It could have been quicker.
Could have been shorter. Could have been way fucking shorter.
Yeah, could have been way shorter. Other than that, I'm pretty excited to see what kind of fucking shenanigans Varney gets up to.
Only 660,000 words to go.
I'm here for it. Also, really excited about all the antiques.
Yeah, some peak antiques content right off the bat.
Which does absolutely put it head and shoulders above most cozy mysteries.
Sources for this episode include Varney the Vampire, or The Feast of Blood, accessible through Project Gutenberg for free. Enjoy. And also, Wikipedia.
Blessed Wikipedia.
Blessed Wikipedia. Donate, won't you? Thank you. If you want to hear more Varney the Vampire, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, or post in our subreddit, r/antiquesfreaks.
If you liked all of these things that we said today about vampires, consider scrolling on down to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leaving us a review. Less vampires, please. This is weird. You could say that. I don't guarantee we'll listen.
More vampires, please. Get us ready for Halloween.
Yeah, and in which case, 100% we are guaranteed to listen. We like vampires here.
If you would like to help support the podcast and listen to deleted scenes, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Special shout out to our current patrons for getting us closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes and keeping the podcast lights on and paying for our hosting, and also filling our hearts with so much love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right. You. Goodbye.